focusing in areas of criminal law and criminal procedure and feminist jurisprudence. She's obviously the charge for the class event, although it's only its third year. It's a huge honor to be asked. Professor Dudley and Professor Verveer were asked in previous years, and they are obviously very beloved, and this year is no exception. Professor Coughlin, obviously, her class, Criminal Investigation, is one of the most popular at the law school by those seeking to go into criminal law and those seeking to learn how to get out of trouble. And also, she's just a joy and always available to students. And obviously, you can see from libel shows year in and year out. Takes a good she has consistently a lot of lines, if not lines, then jumping up and down in class. So without further ado, Professor Ian Coughlin.
I've been trying to think of jokes to start my remarks with, and Steve Hobson, who you will also remember was a character in the libel show, gave me my joke as I was coming down the hallway. I just bumped into him, and he said, "Aren't you nervous?" And I thought, "I'm dying." And I thought of all of you in your interviews with him popping in and out, so that's... he just popped into my interview and made me extremely anxious. I want to start by saying to you very specifically that it is an honor, it's a joy, as well as an obligation for me to stand here with you. It is an obligation. I've tried hard to think about all of you as a group. You are going into different places. You're not going to the kind of practice that I entered, and many of you will not enter law teaching. You're going to lots of different places in the country, private law, public law. Some of you aren't planning to be lawyers. And so I've tried to have all of you in mind, which is something difficult. It's been a difficult task. But it is a true honor for me to be here with you. We're pausing for a moment, right? And we're contemplating the threshold. You are about to cross over a threshold. You are about to cross the threshold between this law school and the other communities that are waiting for you to join them. So I really thank you for asking me to do this special job for you. And I also want to pause and thank you for choosing to spend these three important years of your lives with us. You have studied, you have worked, you have talked endlessly with us, around us, through us, over us. You have played with us. You've played all kinds of games. Games in the classroom, something we call cold calling. We've played all kinds of games on the softball field and elsewhere. And I sincerely thank you for this great gift of your presence. Each of you had many options. There were lots of things that you could have done, but you chose to come here. You chose to attend this law school, and we are forever in your debt for having made that choice. I imagine, and I hope you know how important you are and have been to this living community. I live here. I work here. I love my job. There literally would be no here if it wasn't for you. And so I hope you can understand how special your presence has been, your patience with us, your hard work, your good humor, and your presence. The other thing that I want to say is you've got to feel how significant you are. If you would just look around this room and gaze at each other, and I'm tempted to pause and say, go ahead, do it. Look around, I'm looking at you, go ahead. You know, look around, do it, right? There, see? If you do this, you can see how special you are, right? This. You should be able to see in the eyes of your classmates. Your friends are said to be your truest mirrors, the mirrors of your best self. You can see in the eyes of your friends, your wonderful colleagues, how much they value and respect and admire you. And of course, they know all about you. They know all of the things that you have done, the things that you've done well, the things that you've done less well, yet they value, admire, and respect you. So the proof is here. The proof is in this room if you need it. And I want to emphasize, I'm going to come back to this towards the close of my remarks, that sometimes we really do need our friends. We need our communities. We need our friends. Some of you have taught me that the word peeps is the word I should be using. We need our peeps. We really do. Because they remind us of who we are. And it's this that I want you to keep in mind. You're about to cross the threshold. I'm instantly going to say, not today, because I truly am going to miss you all so much. So I'm glad that we have a little bit of time left. Not much, but a little bit. But when you cross the threshold, you have to carry with you this sense of your own importance. You have to hold fast to this clear understanding that you have made all the difference in the world to us and to each other. You might wonder why. You're going to other places, right? You're going to other institutions, spaces that are different from this law school. But they share with us a very significant characteristic. They are all human institutions. They're human. They're human through and through. So it's you. It's your presence, your choices, your wisdom, your sensible judgments, your ethics, your aspirations. These are the things that are going to make the places where you go what they are. They will stay flat, they will fall, or they will rise depending on what you do. So please keep in mind how important you are. This is true of many institutions you're thinking, right? Right. And absolutely, it's true of many institutions, not just the ones that together make up our justice system, the ones to which you are soon going to be traveling. But lawyers are special, and because of your education, you have special opportunities and, of course, special obligations. And again, I want to invite you to think of it and almost do the experiment. In just a couple of months, you're going to be able to say four little words that carry a lot of power. I am a lawyer. Yeah, you're laughing. You think, go ahead, say it. I am a lawyer, right? These words matter. They matter a whole lot. And if you don't believe me, you will soon discover that I am telling the truth about this, as in all things. You are telling folks, you're telling folks who are in power as well as ordinary folks, that you know how to do things and that you can do things that other people can't do. As a lawyer, you are going to have the power and you will participate in fixing significant human relationships and arrangements. You're going to fix them in the sense of creating them in the first instance and in the sense of mending them. Of course, it's best if you can get things right in the first instance. At least that's what the transactional lawyers like to tell the criminal folks. We're always there to clean up the mess. Much better not to make a mess in the first place. That's right. So fix things. Get them right in the first instance. But then when things are badly, lawyers are there as well. At that point, you can try to mend things. Or if something is broken beyond repair, you can give it a decent burial, mark its passing, and give the people and their arrangements their due. So I really invite you, endorse these four words, their full meaning, their power. I am a lawyer. You've got to say that to yourselves and understand what it's going to mean to you and to the people with whom you interact. I know that not all of you are going to claim that identity. I've talked to many of you about your choices. I know that some of you are going to go to other spaces. But I hope that most of you ultimately do claim the identity as lawyers. And if that's your choice, you have to dig deep for the substance and the wisdom and the judgment to carry through on their promise. I'm going to talk to you for a couple of minutes more. I'm going to talk to you about words. And what I want to suggest to you is that lawyers are as good as their word, and they are as good as their words. Lawyers are as good as their word. This is the old aphorism, right, that urges you to be honest and faithful, admonishes you to be true. And of course, you must be honest. You didn't need me to tell you this. You didn't need anyone at the law school to tell you this. This is something you learned long ago, long before you arrived here. And in fact, when I tell you to be good to your word, I'm trying to offer you a different and additional piece of advice. To be as good as your word, you have to take responsibility. Okay, I want to suggest that you should take a little bit more responsibility than you sometimes think is justly yours. Take responsibility for the small stuff and for the big stuff. When things go wrong, you'll be embarrassed, okay? But as Glenn Robinson recently told me at a very important time in my life, and everything blows over. So you'll be embarrassed, things will go wrong, you will make a mistake. But the best thing to do is to just step up, confess error, yep, I made a mistake, and you will be able to fix it. most mistakes you can fix. There are some fatal mistakes, very, very few, fortunately, and so you should be very thoughtful before you wade into any of those areas. But most mistakes you can fix, and that's exactly what you should do. Make sure the buck stops with you. Even if it was your assistant's fault, take the blame. It will be better in the long run. The other thing that I'm going to mention is, as far as taking credit goes, my advice is the opposite. I think you'll be as good as your word if you take a little bit less credit than you suppose you are due. What you want to do, I suggest, is to share the credit for your good works with others, including the members of your staff, your colleagues. Soon you will have junior colleagues. The best lawyers that I knew were lawyers whose most important victories never saw the light of day. Of course, I'm thinking of criminal practice, but the most successful lawyer is the one who walks the client out of trouble, and no one ever learns about it because the secret is kept. So no one ever knows about the lawyer's most significant victory. No publicity, but of course that lawyer knew that he or she was living a good professional life. And again, as I said, was being true to their word. So again, be as good as your word in the sense of being honest, responsible, fair. But the other thing that I want to remind you of, and of course this is something that you all know, or I'm hoping you do, is that lawyers are as good as their words in another sense. And here what I'm suggesting is, please remember the real world work that your words will be doing. We inhabit a world of texts. Think about the tools that you are going to use as lawyers. You're going to be talking, writing, producing texts. You know this to be true. You know, maybe this is, I shouldn't emphasize this right now with exams coming. You have text to read, text to write, papers to produce, and so forth. But these are texts that you are going to continue to study. You will soon be authoring them in your own voice for your clients or for yourselves. You will be applying these texts for your clients, and you will be doing so in spaces that are anything but academic. So law does its work through words. If you study literary theory or linguistics, you'll know they have a fancy phrase for what we do. They call it a performative utterance. It's unbelievably cool, and it only occurred to me when I was like, we do performative utterances, right? I think of it as the homely word. It's not an utterance, it's just a word. But it's performative in the way the word changes the world. It changes the relations between and among people. It moves assets from one pocket to another. It expands and retracts human opportunity and human flourishing. You know many of these performative words already. Or at least I'm hoping that we remembered to teach them and didn't get too abstract and theoretical. You know they're performative. They're not buzzwords. And you are the keeper of these words. You are going to have the opportunity and the authority to shape them and the work that they do in the real world. Some of the words are quotidian. Some are fairly routine. Others are earth-shattering. They're earth-shattering for the parties, perhaps for the whole community or even the entire world. I offer, I accept. This is my last will and testament. I give and bequeath my assets to my grandchildren. I plead guilty to the crime with which I am accused. We, the jury, find the accused innocent of the crimes with which she's been charged. I adopt this child. I relinquish custody of this child. Or how about this one? Be it resolved that the United States declares war on, you fill in the blank. These are performative words, and you as lawyers are going to be the people, as I say, who are the keepers, the guardians, the shapers. So be very, very careful. Your generation will decide whether to add new performative words to the canon and to identify just exactly what those words will be. Think about these examples. I now pronounce you husband and wife. How about I now pronounce you wife and husband? How about I now pronounce you civil partners? I now pronounce you spouse and spouse, or husband and husband, or wife and wife. I have no idea where you come out on these questions. You know where I come out. I don't know where you come out. And it is going to be your generation. That's one small example. Others of you, yes, will be in the president's office. You'll be there at that moment. making decisions about other words. But you're the guardians of the words. Choose them carefully. Choose them wisely. Turn your phrases well. We'll be here. We'll be studying. We'll be reading the words you write. We'll be writing articles about them and talking to you, having a dialogue at that level. Last couple of thoughts that I have. It seems to me that you're coming of age at a difficult time. This seems to me to be a time where there is some uncertainty and anxiety in the world, even some danger, perhaps far from our shores, but danger nonetheless. As I was thinking about you and your generation, maybe what I'm saying is always true. Maybe it always seems to be the case that you are entering into an anxious moment. But I feel as if opinions are so polarized these days. Common ground is very hard to find. What I have found in the past couple of years is that I sometimes find myself violently disagreeing with people on the other side, so violently that I feel I have to avoid them, people who are my friends. And so I worry that we're going to fall out of dialogue. We're not going to be able to continue to speak to each other. This is something that is true of the political climate, but it's also specifically true of the adversary culture that you are about to enter. We say we value law as an adversary culture. Some spaces are much less adversary, but in some we value the notion of adversariness. And so it's difficult not to have these very sharp disagreements, these polarized moments. And I've taught some of you, many of you, in difficult classes, and I fear that I'm sometimes a hothead. And when I find myself working up ahead of steam, here's what I've learned from you. Okay? This is something that I've taken away from you. Specific conversations with you in seminars and in large classes. When you find yourself violently disagreeing with the other side, try, if you can, to see what they see. Just for a minute, ask yourself, can I perceive what they perceive? Can I glimpse their experience? Can I understand them a little better? What is their best argument? The best argument that you could make, because you are all going to be talented lawyers for them. What is their best argument? Can they meet it? Can you glimpse their point of view? Just try their shoes on for just a minute. Try out the justice of their claims. Doing so, I think, tends to break the impasse. It gives you the chance to glimpse the possibility for some compromise, for some meeting of the minds. So, here you are. You're at the threshold. What are you going to do? That's what I want to know, and I can't wait to see. All you have is now. It's here. It's in this room. It's this community. It's your collective wisdom and learning. So that's all you have. But the future is waiting for you, and it is not your future only. It is the future of your family. It is the future of your friends. It is the future of your teachers, of your local communities, of your nation. So what will you do? And what I suggest, again, I mentioned this in the beginning, is that when you reach an impasse, if you have a crisis of conscience, if you have a dilemma that you can't resolve on your own, ask for advice. You might want to turn back to the people you met here, and I'm talking about the folks that you're standing with in the room. It's wonderful to stay connected to the friends that you made. You're going to grow, but you're going to age. And you know what? As you age, it's really lovely to have friends of your youth by your side because they remember the youngster. They can see the young person behind that mask of wrinkles or age, right? They can see the youth. They can see it. And so look at yourselves now. Look at your beautiful, shining faces because that's what they are. And when you find yourself in trouble later, turn back. Ask each other, what do you think? You, again, I mentioned before, you know each other well. You know all about each other, and you still like and respect each other. You can expect candor, even brutal honesty. So do that. Don't forget about the community. I come from an Irish Catholic family, and we usually don't say things like goodbye. We say farewell. We say God bless, which may be too religious for some of you. We say God bless. We say Godspeed. We say may the wind be at your backs. We say may the road rise to meet your feet. And
And when you're facing a headwind, or when the road drops or becomes very steep, we're here. You can come back. You can call on us. We'll answer the phone. We'll talk to you. We'll miss you. God bless you. God bless you.